thank you for coming this early. I know there's drinking after every day of a conference, and normally in the morning, if that were in London, everybody would be like, and still drunk, like David here, basically. And it's good that you're here. If I speak too fast, just wave your hands, because sadly enough, I don't speak any Czech whatsoever. I'm Chris, I'm here from Yahoo, and I want to talk to you a bit about something that I've been encountering over the years as a developer. I've been a web developer for 12 years now. I've built things like Yahoo Answers, Yahoo Maps, McDonald's England, visitbritain.com, HP Europe, all these big websites, and I found that most of the time we always do the same things over and over again because we're not lazy. We always try to do things when we shouldn't actually need to do them anymore because they've been done already for us. So I'm by now a developer evangelist. So what that one means is that I go out there and I talk to people about what we do. I hire people, I train them in the company, and I make sure that that people understand how to use our things. Because as developers, we always write solutions, and then we think the world understands them immediately. Whereas it needs a translator, somebody who explains this is how easy it is, this is how hard it is, this is what you can do with it, and that's my job right now. And I came up with the term myself, so that's pretty good, like when you can make your job. And people ask me, how can you get into that role, and how can I make my company understand what my worth is? Because most of the time it's like, here's a website, build it, CodeMonkey, rather than like, what do you think is a good idea? And we normally know more about what's going on the web or what goes wrong in the web than our project managers do, but they don't listen to us much. So I've written a handbook on the whole subject to allow people actually to go into that time mode a bit as well. And if you go back to your companies and you tell your boss, read this, and then you know why we would be more successful if we had a developer evangelist. It's Creative Commons. It's completely free, so if you want to translate it to Czech, that'd be nice. It's being translated in Chinese at the moment, so that's good. So one thing I always confuse Americans with is with the term cleverly lazy. Because lazy is always like, oh, that's a bad thing. People are terrible when they're lazy because they don't do work, and it's terrible that you are lazy and you say people should be lazy. But there's a difference between lazy and cleverly lazy. That's why I made the definition here. The lazy thing says, I don't want to do that. I don't want to build that. I can't be bothered. It's like, this is, again, one of these problems. I don't want to solve this problem. The cleverly lazy term, on the other hand, means that I don't want to do that ever again, so I do it right this time. And a lot of developers don't take that step because we're like, yeah, I know now how to make a CSS hover, menu, whatever. And I want to be the expert in the company that they ask every time they do a CSS hover menu. And then you realize half a year later that was not a good idea because it gets really boring once you've done it 6 times. So do your things as if you write it for the next guy that has to take over from you. This is cleverly lazy. Because I myself always looked at other people's code, 80% of my job. I get them. You don't start a new project, you get an old project and you have to fix with somebody else's code. And you look at it and you're like, what has this person thought of? What the heck is going on there? And then you realize it was you 5 months ago. Because you didn't document it, you just put it somewhere into CVS. You're like, okay, next time I write something, explain it and write it cleaner. So lazily built products do the job, but are impossible to maintain. These are these websites that you get thrown over and you're like, okay, he said this navigation will only have 6 items ever. And now we got a 7th item and we have to change everything in the website. That's not really clever development, but it was at that time the right thing to do. Cleverly lazy products, on the other hand, do the job, are easy to understand, extend, and build on a solid base. So they do the job, but I can also, in 2 months' time, look at the code again, oh yeah, this is this one. Or I can say, I need 7 elements now in the main navigation, and it shouldn't be a problem putting these 7 in. It also shouldn't be a problem to flip them to the bottom of the page or the side of the page, and so on and so forth. And they build on a solid base as well, so that's a bigger problem. Every time we build something cool, we do it for the current technology. I've built websites that were amazing in Netscape 3 and Internet Explorer 4. 2 years later, I want to hide them in a shelf and like, I've never done them. But you had to do it at that time because that was the state of the art. But I didn't build them on a solid base. When I started thinking about web standards, when I started thinking about validating my code, when I started using best practices, I realized I'm such a better programmer because I don't have to think about my things anymore. They just work in browsers and also in Internet Explorer 6, which I don't consider a browser anymore. So our job really is evolving the web, which we don't do right now, because right now we just develop things. We just put things on the web and we hope they work. And when a new browser comes out, we're like, oh God, that's 2 months of fixing it, even for Opera. And we shouldn't, because our work should be that we build things that have a meaning, that build things that do work, but also push the envelope and make the web something better than it used to be. If you use Ajax, don't use Ajax because you should use Ajax, but to make it easier. I love that I can go to YouTube now, start uploading a video. It uploads the video and I type all the descriptions and everything in while the video is uploading. Beforehand, I had to wait 15 minutes and then after 15 minutes it told me, oh, wrong format, I can't put that into YouTube. Thank you, just wasted 15 minutes of my life that I could have used for cutting my hair or showering or something like that. To evolve things, we need to be free to do new things. And most of the time, we don't have time to think about new technologies, to look up new ideas, to play with the technology out there, to play with the new ideas that browsers come up with, because we're busy fixing bugs. We're busy fixing problems in our old systems. And I want us as developers to go away from fixing bugs to writing code. I don't want to spend 10 minutes building something in CSS and then 6 hours debugging it. That's not the point of me as a developer. The point of me as a developer is build things that people love, that people can use, that makes their life easier. But no, most of the time we build things so the design department can say, oh, the rounded corners and the drop shadows have to work. How is that better for the end user? Oh, I don't care. That's branding. We have to do that. The problem as developers is that we stand in our own way as well. Because we always dislike, yeah, I want to do it myself. I want to understand everything that I do, so I'm not going to use something that somebody else has done. Something out of the box can never be as good as the things that I've built. Which is just not making sense, because as developers and as open source developers and as Creative Commons people, we all are clever. We can all work together and build one good thing together. And if it doesn't do one thing, we should extend the one thing that we've used rather than build another new one. Say you want an image carousel right now on a website. You go to jQuery, you find like 15 of them, 17, 20 of them. And one of them is missing the opportunity to fade in, fade out. The other one doesn't have any keyboard support. All of them are half-baked because some developer just wrote them. This is the best thing ever. I'm not going to use somebody else's. And that's the biggest developer trap that is there. We always want to do our things ourselves. We're developers. Oh, it's great that all these people throw out these frameworks and throw out free stuff, but I can do it better. I can make it in 5 lines of JavaScript and 1 line of CSS, and I'm whoa, and the girls are going to love me because I know JavaScript, instead of just building things that make sense. And I call the biggest trap the feature loop. And a feature loop, which should come now, is we find something complex. We find a complex problem, like a tab navigation. We want to build a tab navigation, and in HTML there are no tabs. In HTML5 there is. And we have to simulate that somehow in a browser and make it work across all the different browsers that are out there. So we build something, and we build a wonderful, simple solution for it. And great, we have a simple solution out there. Next right step that we do is we put it out on the web, and we ask for feedback. Which is cool, because that's exactly what you should do, because you yourself can never judge the quality of your product because you wrote it. It's like asking a mother if her son is pretty. Yeah, of course he will be pretty, because it's the mother. And the rest of the world is like, oh my God. And then we start putting features in, because we get feedback. People tell us, it should do this, and it should do that, and it should do this, and it should do that. And this is like this thing that goes back and forth, and back and forth, and back and forth. And by the time we've done with all the features that people told us, we're back at square one and we build something complex. And the next developer will find our formerly simple solution, find it complex, and make a simple solution for it again. So we're running in a circle for about 10 years now, and it drives me crazy because not every feature has to be in there. Whenever I wrote like a JavaScript menu, for example, a drop-down menu, and then the first thing that people asked, why can't I instantiate it 17 times on a page? And you're like, it's a JavaScript menu. How many menus do you need for a normal document? You're doing the information architecture wrong and finding technology to make it pretty. That's just stupid. This is the kind of systems that we have to use day in, day out for like invoicing and banks and these kind of things. So I found that we don't develop the web. We fill it up with solutions to the same problem, all of which are half done. And if you go through older websites, you try to maintain it and you try to upgrade it for a new browser coming out or make it work for the iPhone, you will find that. You will find that, okay, this solution was great at that time, but there's no way I can reuse it right now. So I have to either restart the whole website, which nobody pays for, or I just put new things in and out all the time. The other problem that developers have is that they say, this is my solution and it's better than anybody else's because I've written it. Like, I made a different approach to the same thing. My favorite are CSS guys that now use CSS for everything that they can think of. I've seen, the other day I saw modular pop-up windows in CSS, and it was on a list apart. Great technical article, great idea, really stupid idea in terms of accessibility and in terms of usability. Because a modular window that blocks my whole screen should be keyboard accessible. Because if I'm on my BlackBerry, for example, and I don't have a mouse, I cannot turn that thing off ever because it only works with CSS. And I would like to press an escape button to get rid of these things. The other thing is we have the short attention span. So once we've built something and people told us it looks great and it's a wonderful thing, then we're like, okay, I'm bored of it. I do something new now. I solve another complex problem, make a simple solution, and then a complex solution again. And 6 months later, when people ask me questions about my product, I don't answer them anymore because I'm already busy answering questions for a new product. So when somebody builds something, there's 1 or 2 weeks where we care about it, and then we get rid of it. And we're like, okay, next thing. Yeah, I don't care about that anymore. And even things like Suckerfish menu, for example, when you talk to the developers now, they're like, I wish they hadn't put it out because so many people abuse it and use it in the wrong way. But I don't have time anymore to answer them and tell them that. One thing that people always forget is that code wrecks that we have on the web, like half-finished code and code that looked fancy but didn't quite do the job, are a security issue. Because every old code that is out on the web will be attacked by some malicious code or other. So every time you have something outdated on the web that you don't upgrade constantly, you will have a security flaw. And that could be a JavaScript menu with Ajax. That could be a PHP solution that seemed easy at that time. And if you don't upgrade, you have a problem on the web. And security is a big problem. I just came back from Paris where I gave a talk about security. And it's amazing how many people in the audience didn't realize just how open and how bad their website was. My favorite was a content management system that has an inbuilt user and a super user called built-in. Nowhere in the documentation it says that this thing exists. I did a live search on Google on the web. I found one of the websites logged in live, could change the whole website because they didn't turn off that one user. And this is the kind of stuff that gets forgotten and stays out there. And these are the code wrecks. The other thing is that browsers suck. That's not really the browser's fault because the browser manufacturers keep doing better things and making them better. But every browser does one thing or another wrong. And this is because it's software, it has to be shipped, it has to have features. They cannot put everything in that the standards people come up with. Sometimes it doesn't make sense or there's a business case for something else. And then, of course, there's people not upgrading. I mean, Internet Explorer 8 is a great product, but Internet Explorer 6 is still there because 5 years ago Microsoft told people, if you buy that 10-year plan, you never have to upgrade. And yeah, cool, now I have to upgrade. No, I'm not going to do this. So they actually build things so people don't have to upgrade, which is just, because IE6 is a security flaw. It's malware by now. I'm sorry, we have to get rid of that somehow. So the other thing that always people forget is that as a developer, as a web developer, you need to know much more than you think we really do. Because a lot of times people think, yeah, do your technology, and that's what you do. But what you need to know as a developer is you need to know the technologies involved. What does HTML, what does CSS, what does JavaScript do, what does SVG do? Then you need to know how browsers deal with these technologies and how they fail to support them. CSS is dead easy. Making CSS work in the world right now is really, really hard because browsers make really, really fancy things that you didn't think should be useful for anybody, but yeah, they haven't. Security concerns and attack vectors. Like when I put this JavaScript out there and I have my user's password and login in an Ajax request, is this really a good idea? No, it isn't, but it looks easy, so I'm gonna do it. Usability and accessibility of the product. How many menus do you know out there that have proper keyboard support for somebody who doesn't have a mouse? Think of these things. Internationalization of our products, can they be translated in other languages? Will Czech fit in? Can they be right-to-left languages like Hebrew and Arabic? And a drop-down menu that goes to the side when it's in Arabic should go to the other side. And most people never think of these things when they build a system like that. Performance concerns. How will this thing perform? Like, if I always love people that find one widget in one framework, another one in another, another one in another, have jQuery prototype, MooTools, YUI, and Dojo on their website because they have five different widgets. And they download 1.3 meg of JavaScript just before the page starts rendering. So think about, things should be snappy on the web, and that's the most important thing. Multiple platform support. Like, okay, that's great on your Windows machine. Does it work on a Mac as well? Does it work on Linux as well? Does it work on a handheld? Does it degrade gracefully on something like a BlackBerry? The web is not there for browsers. The web is not there for MacBook Pros. The web is there for everybody. And everybody can choose what they want to use to see your website. They should not get the same result, but they should get the same content. Biggest problem, if anybody ever says it should look the same in every browser, they haven't understood the web. If your website works the same in every browser out there, then you've done something completely wrong. Or you've loaded in a JPEG. And probably that won't be the same in every browser either. And then the flexibility of the interface. Can that content be this or this much or this much or this much? Can it have an image in there without breaking? This is what we have to think about all the time. So whenever people come up, like back-end developers, like front-end guys, HTML is so easy. Show them this list and tell them to fix all these problems. In the end, good developers should be like librarians. And librarians are great people because they're clever, sometimes sexy, not that often. They don't know everything that is in the library, but they know where to find the right solution within a second. And this is what you should think of as a developer as well. You don't need to know everything yourself. You just need to know where to find the best one, and you need to know how to use it. And that's all you need to do. But as developers, we always say like, oh, I could use it, but I can write it myself, then I understand the language. And you accumulate knowledge that in 5 years' time you don't need anymore. And this is just sad. I mean, I know things, how to fix things in Netscape 4. Nobody's going to pay me for that now anymore, sadly enough. But I had that back then, and I was the expert. I was so awesome with that. So build on a solid foundation. So if you build something, build with web standards, build with things that have been tested by other companies, build with things that will work in the future as well. And these are just standards. This is the only thing we can think of. Because right now everybody goes crazy about WebKit. WebKit transitions, CSS transitions, really sexy. I can move things around. Awesome. And yeah, 7 years ago we did this with Internet Explorer 5 and 6 and we made colored scroll bars and everybody pointed at us and said, that's evil. Just because it looks sexier in WebKit doesn't make it a better idea. So let's think about like if you should really concentrate on that and rely on it, it's going to work. The other thing to think of is that you should build with components. So instead of building things in one big chunk, build in little parts. Build in little parts that can be reused across all of your projects. And this is the easiest way to keep things secure, to keep things maintainable, and to fix things in one place once they need to be fixed. But rather than like writing a big document, you just write like little chunks and put them together. And also interface components, have menu components, have login components, reusable things, like little bricks to put together. You also need a good debugging environment. That's the biggest problem in the past, like browsers didn't tell you useful things like Internet Explorer, object is not defined, or undefined is not defined, was always a very good useful message as well. Or null is not an object, yes, true, but what null and where? Wrong lines, and nowadays we have Firebug, we have Dragonfly for Opera, we have the web developer kits for Safari. For every browser, there's something out there where we can proper debug things, and that's great, because we should have code that can fail, and we know why it fails and when, not like it fails, oh, we have to fix it now. Then you plan for extension. So if you build something, make sure that anybody else can use it and add onto it. And that's very important, because people will add onto it, and you don't want them to rewrite your main code, because that way is like trunking, and you never will find anything working together anymore. And write documentation, because documentation is terribly important. And you as the developer should not write your documentation. So you should have somebody sitting next to you that you have to explain what the thing does and how to use it, and that person should ask you questions constantly. and that person writes the documentation, because that's good documentation. You yourself writing your documentation is just a matter of like a checkbox on my task list, rather than like really writing documentation, because you understand it already. My favorite myth is, oh, good code explains itself. Yeah, if you're as clever as the other guy, yes, it does, but that's seldom. And now I'm going to talk to you about why I'm here, but just to show you, all these ideas have been used in the Yahoo User Interface Library. The Yahoo User Interface Library is not a JavaScript library. It's a framework to build websites with. It starts from the idea of a website, and it ends at JavaScript widgets and JavaScript implementations. All of these things are built by Yahoo for 450 million users in 26 countries. And we have all the developers dedicated to actually build this thing and make it work for all these people. So everything in the YUI is open source, it's BSD licensed, you can use it for any commercial company you want, and it actually does all these things because we built it ourselves because we wanted it. We have 26 different offices. We had over 4,000, 5,000 developers, something like that. If we allowed every developer to do whatever they wanted, we would never be able to send one product from one country to another. And we have to do that all the time. So that's why we built the YUI and said, like, let's fix this browser problem at the root and say, we fix a browser and we allow people to use the standards, to build with the standards, and actually make it work across the browsers in a library, in an in-between step. And this is what every library does. jQuery does the same thing. Dojo does the same thing. If browsers stop sucking and everybody starts upgrading their browser, JavaScript libraries can go away. That's what everybody in the library world says. It's not going to happen, but it would be a great thing to have. The first thing that the YUI is based on are design patterns. And these are things that we found in user research. So we go to users and we tell them, how would you like to pick a date on a website? Like when you try to book a flight, not like pick a date to take to the pub, but a date for a flight. How would you like that to work? Should it be a calendar? Should it be a form field? Should it be like this? And we test this with people, and then we come up with solutions. And this is what a pattern is. A pattern is like, here's a problem, here's the solution we found that people like the most, and here are the steps to replicate it. And here's the way to solve this problem. So even if you don't want to use anything of YUI, when you build an interface, look through the patterns, because most of the time we've solved a problem before and we ask real users how they like it. And not like, oh, everybody loves a date picker that is circular. And these kind of things that people come up with. Based on this, we build components that you can reuse, like a rich text editor, a menu, a layout manager, tree view, and so on and so forth. In the background here, you see Yahoo Mail being rebuilt only with these free components. So we put this online and we show people, hey, here's Yahoo Mail, and they're like, oh no, it doesn't work, I can't read my email. And of course you can't read your email because it's only a demo for the widgets that we have, but it looked so normal that they thought, hey, that was Yahoo Mail. So you can build that, can recolor it, put your logo over it, sell it. Okay, you need some mail servers as well, but that's the other problem. And it comes to extensibility, we thought, okay, we built these widgets and we don't want people to mess around with the core code. Because this, when a new browser comes out, we fix it there. And this means Chrome will be supported, this means Opera 11 will be supported, and all these different browsers that will come in the future can be fixed in that core code. If people start messing around with your core code of your widget, that will not be possible anymore because people can't upgrade. WordPress is that classic example. Everybody messes around in WordPress so much that they can't do a security upgrade anymore, and then their blog got hacked. So instead of just messing around with the core code, we thought, how can we make people extend our things? And what we do is, in JavaScript, we do it with events. So there's custom events on everything in these widgets. So it tells you, every time something happens, it tells you what happened. So you can interject there and say like, okay, I want to do, when this happens, I want to do something else and stop the original thing from happening. And it's a classic way of Flash development. They've done that for years. And it's such a clever idea to make your widget extensible for other technology or other usability rather than just changing the core code. You got things like before submit event, change footer event, config changed event. There's thousands and thousands of events being fired. And funnily enough, the browser doesn't get slower because of it. When I built Yahoo Maps, my first job in Yahoo was like, hey, here's a Flash interface. You've got 3 months to turn it into HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. What, with all animations and everything? Yeah, let's do that. And we did it all with these custom events, no problem whatsoever, because we worked as 8 developers, independent of another. We just fired each other events and listened for them and then basically built it that way. So you can work in parallel with other people. The other thing is that they're all skinnable, so they're all the look and feel is in CSS. So I don't need to understand JavaScript to change the color, and I can send it to a design department and say, like, hey, make the CSS and make it pretty now. It works, but make it now shiny. And that's a very, very important thing of anything you do as well. It's documented like hell. It's got a lot of the documentation comes from the source code in comments, which is a great idea because it means if you fix something, you also update the documentation. But then we also have the step-by-step documentation to make it available for people that don't read man pages all the time, but actually want to have a human explanation of what to do. So there's everything in the UI has a simple example and then a more complex example to tell you, to get you on the way to use it. One other thing is it has a really good solid CSS framework in it. So I'm tired of CSS. I'm tired of making layouts in CSS that break in one way or another in different browsers. So we built a CSS framework that allows us to basically do the layout with one include and some divs, and we don't have to worry about it because it will be tested across all the different platforms for us. What you also see here is you have these roles and the order things in there. And this is new, the new Y area stuff that actually allows you to give keyboard access to your websites. So this is already in the CSS grids builder in there. So if you don't want to understand CSS, don't try to do it, please. We have so many things out there that just are terrible. So look at that. It actually allows you to paint the layout that you want. And then it gets you, you can set the header content, footer content. And when you hit show code, you get a copy and paste HTML with like comments where to put your content. And the CSS is already hosted by Yahoo for you worldwide. So if somebody in the Czech Republic goes on your website, they will get the CSS from a Czech server. If somebody goes in Brazil to the website, it gets it from a Brazilian server, and so on and so forth. It's distributed worldwide. If you don't like our servers, you can also use Google's, because they realize it's a great idea to offer that as well. So the other thing is that all of the YUI examples come with examples to play with, because most of the time we don't read documentation, we take an example and we change some things and work around until we reach where we want to go. So all of them come with easy examples. They come with a logging system that tells you what's happening to each of these components, like all the events that I showed earlier are being fired there and explained to you. So change event fired, drag event fired, and so on and so forth. And there's also a profiler that if you have JavaScript and you think the JavaScript is too slow and you wonder where it is, you can run the profiler over it and it will actually tell you when it exactly happened. What was the problem with your JavaScript? And that's not only YUI, that's any JavaScript you want to run through. We have a performance website as well if you generally want to look at performance. And one of the things we build on the performance website is YSlow. YSlow is a Firefox extension that basically runs through any of your websites and tells you where you're slow and why it happens and what to change to fix it. And that's a great thing if you pitch, for example, for a company and they say, like, oh, our website is great. You're like, just run it through YSlow and tell them, hey, I can make your website twice as fast. How about that? Okay, let's fix these little things. It's always good to tell people what the problem is. So one thing I want to make people aware a lot is that you should use the web to build for the web. A lot of the times we build something, we put it on the web, and then we wonder why nobody comes. Then we pay an SEO consultant a lot of money to make people go there, although they don't want to. When you build something new nowadays, always put a CMS in the middle. Don't start any hard-coded content. Pointless, really pointless, because in the end, you won't be the one that maintains the website, and the person maintaining it doesn't know HTML. That's a point. That's a matter of fact. And then you just put your content worldwide on the web. Put your photos on Flickr. Put your CVs on Zing and LinkedIn. Your links on Delicious. Your videos on YouTube. Your little updates on Twitter. Your events on Upcoming. Your addresses on Google Maps. The benefit of that is that all these systems are optimized for hosting that content. If I want to show videos on my website, why should I convert them before I upload them? Why can't I just put them on YouTube and embed them in my website and done? People will find that on YouTube, learn about my company on YouTube, and go from YouTube to my website. Same with photos on Flickr, same with LinkedIn. People will learn on these systems because they're already on these systems and people chat there because they're social. And they will learn about your company and go to your company through that then. And that worked out for me well, and I've written a book on that about 2 years ago. And it didn't sell because of that stupid title. I mean, web development solutions, Ajax APIs, libraries, and hosted services made easy. You fall asleep while you read the title. So the original title was No Bullshit Web Design, but I didn't want to do that. The next thing is to use APIs. Every good company out there uses APIs to build their systems because then they scale. And you can use these APIs to put content on your websites, and that works out for you as well. The problem with using APIs is that there are a lot of them out there. There's 1,447 APIs, and that's a month ago. And all of them come with different authentication, different variables going in, different content coming out, a different format. So you spend most of your time using APIs reading documentation, and that's not the point of using an API. You just want to get to that data, and you want to use that data. And this is why, once again, we saw a problem, and we want to have a simple solution for it, and we came up with YQL. YQL, or the Yahoo Query Language, is an unified interface language to the web. We build everything on APIs. We have dozens of APIs in the company, and we spend hours talking to each other in meeting rooms, like how to use an API of the same company, and we realized that's wasted time and money. So we came up with YQL, and YQL is simply select what from source, where conditions, and pipe filters. So you can use that to access any API that we have and any API on the planet now. And YQL itself is a REST endpoint, a REST API that is on queryyahooapis.com, v1 public YQL. And then you put your query in and the format you want to have it out as. It's JSON, XML, JSONP, JSONPX, which is basically HTML inside a JSON construct. Say, for example, you want to show photos of a website. Of a geographical location. You could say, I do a Flickr search for Paris and Paris by night, and then I get the Paris Hilton porno, which is not necessarily what you want to show on your website. It gets boring really quickly. But you could use the Geo API of Yahoo and say, select star from GeoPlaces where text is London, UK, to find London. And that one will give you all the information you get about London, and it will give you a diagnostics part which tells you what happened. So the real API you called with this statement in YQL was where yahooapis.com/v1places q london uk *0 count 10. But you don't need to know about this because YQL makes it as easy as select star from GeoPlaces. Once you've done that, you get all the information of London, and it has latitude, longitude, it has a where on earth ID. Where on earth ID is we give a number to everything on this planet rather than latitude and longitude. So you have places of interest, you have cities, you have geographical regions, you have countries, you have continents, and super names. And then you can say, okay, give me only that Where on Earth ID, because I don't want to have the rest of that stuff. So you can filter down, instead of select star, you can select Where on Earth ID, and you only get the Where on Earth ID back. And then you say, okay, I want Flickr photos. Good, Flickr understands Where on Earth ID. Select ID from Flickr photos search, where on Earth ID in. And the other statement is select Where on Earth ID from GeoPlaces. And license equals 4 means Creative Commons photos. So I can actually now show photos from London without having the problem that Jack London would show up in between because I'm going through another API. I'm using two APIs here without knowing them, which is great. And you get the data back. The diagnostics part tells you about these two different APIs and what you would have to know to use them. And you get photo IDs back. Then you want to have all the information of these photos, and you go through another API of Flickr, and you say select star from Flickr photos info, and so on and so forth. So you can remix APIs from the whole planet, from every company out there, with YQL in this easy language. And that gives you back the all XML data that you need, or probably don't need. And if you put it in YQL and you put it back as a JSON output, you can use that in JavaScript immediately. So this is all the JavaScript you would have to write to display photos from London on your website. And the URL generated for you is generated for you, copy and paste by YQL. And that's pretty cool, I think. That, like, half a year ago, would have cost me like 2 months of my life to build that thing. And nowadays, I can do it in like 3 minutes. And then you can use these widgets that I talked about to basically show it in an interesting manner, like a map next to it, an image carousel. And all of these things are out-of-the-box YUI components that I put together in 10 minutes. And this you could sell to somebody. Put a logo on top, do it. Make it a different color so it doesn't look like it's YUI. No problem whatsoever. Other thing I've done, Frankfurt. I was in Frankfurt the other day, and I thought I'd make a little website about Frankfurt. So I got the information about Frankfurt from Wikipedia. I've got a Yahoo map next to it. I've got photos from Flickr, the way I just showed you. And then I got events from upcoming, and I've got the weather from Yahoo Weather. And the first thing, the first trick to do that is use curl. Curl in PHP or on the command line or whatever allows you in a language to be a browser, so to access web services. So this is the function getStuff, just does a curl call, gets the information, and if it can't find anything, it throws an error, otherwise it gives me the data back. Then I take my my web service from YQL as the root, and I have a city and a location. And the first thing I do here is I actually do select star from HTML, where URL is wikipedia.org, wiki for the city, and I scrape the HTML from Wikipedia and to show it in my website. The good thing about the HTML, select star from HTML, is that it runs it through HTML tidy, so it fixes problems for you as well. Then I do the same thing for Yahoo Upcoming, so all these slides are available, so don't read the code right now. select star from upcoming events, then I do select star from Flickr photos, and then I do a select description from RSS with the weather, and I put the whole thing together. Again, it would be now go and read the documentation of YQL, but nobody's going to do that. So we build an interface for that. The YQL interface is the YQL console, and I can play with any of these systems in there, and the REST query is later on what I copy and paste back into my code. Down there, the data tables are the ones that give you all these data data sources like GeoPlaces and Flickr Info Search. When you click on them, you get a description, what they do and what you need to put in, what you get out. So the documentation step that I always needed to read up on. And up there is like example queries, so you can actually click them up front and see what you do that. Any data on the web will do. So you can do select star from Atom, CSV, Feed, HTML, JSON, microformats, RSS, XML. No matter what data is on the web, YQL can scrape that and convert it for you to something useful. I've done this, for example. This was a website that had funny jokes, things you would never know without TV. And with this amount of code and one YQL statement, I turned it into a little badge that those people can put in other websites. And this is all it needed. Basically, a bit of DOM scripting to generate a div with an ID, and put one of these facts in there, and you can press a button to get another fact, and if you click on the see all facts, it goes back to the original website. So you can use a website that you maintain somewhere else on your network as a data source using YQL to convert it. And if people already maintain that website, that's great, so you don't have to explain them another content management system. I've also done this for mobile phone applications before, and it's really terribly easy to do. The other thing that YQL does, it has community tables, and that's on GitHub. So every company can write an XML schema to allow their services to be used inside YQL. And we have a lot of them already. We have like Amazon, we have New York Times, we have Google, we have Microsoft. People realize it's a great idea to write one of these schemas, and people then can use select star from Microsoft Bing where search term is this and that. We host them on datatables.org for you. We cache the results for 15 minutes on the YQL server. We limit the access to 10,000 an hour and 100,000 a day. So if you want to be a company that has an API on the web but you don't want to buy a server park, that's an easy way of doing that. And I've talked to the Newsweek agency, and I'm going to talk to other TV channels soon as well, because it's a terribly easy idea to play with the web. All of these open tables are on GitHub. So you can actually look at them as well and just fork them and understand what other people have been doing. And my personal website, for example, is done with that kind of thing as well. So everything in there is from other sources of the web. Like my presentations are from SlideShare, my upcoming events are from my blog, then there are links with videos, then there are links from Delicious with audio and interviews. And this thing is always up to date by me using the social web, by me going up and uploading a slide deck to SlideShare, by me going out there and uploading a video. So all of these things I maintain outside my server, and I use YQL to put it all together into one interface, and I'm done. And the same thing you can do. So don't reinvent the wheel. Don't do the things you want to do. The first thing as a developer, I do it myself. The first thing as a developer should be like, look around, who's done it? And it can be YOI, it can be Dojo, it can be jQuery, I don't care. As long as the result, the thing that you do, you know it's going to be maintained in half a year's time, and not the jQuery god designer of that cool interface will be bored with it next week and it will never be maintained again. And that's what I call about lazy, and I thank you very much.